Let's bring on our guest, Rod Eccles, and his website is his name, rodeccles.net. Good afternoon, Rod. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Annie. I'm doing great. How is everybody down there?
Just fine.
Nice and sunny. It's nice and sunny and warm out here. I want to welcome to everyone that's joining us in the chat room. I see it filling up. If you are listening on your smart device, please remember to press 1 if you want to ask a question and join the conversation. Rod, I have never seen a political season like I have through this last election, you know, pre-election and post-election. It is the nuttiest world out there, and it's coming at us from all angles. And sometimes you just go into overload, and you got to turn the news off because you just can't take it anymore. What is a person to do?
You know, this is a crazy cycle, but the reason why it's crazy is because we've never experienced anything quite like this before, meaning that it's Trump and him being topsy-turvy and turning the entire establishment upside down. You have to realize that Trump is an outsider to everything. I mean, he's not a media darling outside of The Apprentice, and even then, when he was doing The Apprentice, the media couldn't understand why his show was a hit for so long. So he's not a media darling. He's not a Democrat darling. He's not a Republican darling. He's not a political darling. He is from the outside on everything. Now, when you want to talk about an outsider coming in, this just doesn't I can't remember. The only way an outsider gets into power anytime during world history is if they seize it by military brute force. That's the only way they seize power. Trump didn't do that. He went directly to the American people, and the American people voted him in. Now, that is a complete and utter rebuttal of the entire political system and political process in all parties, whether they be Democrat, Republican, Independent, the Green Party, even to a certain extent the outlying parties like the Libertarians and so forth. I mean, he just tossed everything on its head. So we're not going to see anything normal for a while. We're really not. As long as he's in office, we're not going to see anything normal.
Well, no, and it's funny because now around some of my very close immediate relatives, I have to be careful not to mention the name Trump because some of them would go absolutely rabid. It's a shame. God, most of us, you know, there's no problem with this, but, you know, hey, what is wrong with the Trump derangement syndrome? You know, when you turned around and cursed out Bush, we didn't say anything. You know, we just took it in stride. All right, that's my crazy relative, and you walked away. They can't seem to do this in reverse.
I don't. Again, this is simply because he is a complete and total and utter outsider, and he's not even an outsider that they could deal with and put up with and accept into the fold. Well, he doesn't really want to be in the fold in the first place, so he's insulted them by not wanting to join them.
But he does have a tremendous learning curve, and he's picking up really quickly because he took the defeat of Obamacare, and at first it looked like he was going to throw a temper tantrum. But I guess some of the people that was with him in the campaign and they dropped off when he came into office are starting to get back on the phone with him and talking to him again. People like Newt Gingrich go, wait a minute. You didn't lose everything yet. Let's go back to the drawing board the same way you do a deal. Let's go back to the drawing board and let's see what we can put together. Because even Rand Paul is saying, hey, the fight's not over. You know, come talk to us and let's see what we can work out.
You know, I think what people expected was him to have a hissy fit and then they go curl up into a trough ball in Trump Tower or at Mar-a-Lago. But what they have forgotten, what they don't realize is this man's resolve. He's not leaving Obamacare behind. But what they can't understand is normally what you'd have is somebody who's a politician who's in office, who would spend all his time blaming others for the defeat and not moving forward. Trump is just saying, okay, well, we lost on this one for now. We'll get back to it later. I need to check off the next thing on my list. So we're moving forward. And he just keeps moving forward. And the problem is that the politicians in D.C. and in state capitals around the country, they're not used to that. They cannot keep up with him. That's their problem. And as long as he keeps doing that, they're going to be chasing him instead of him having to defend himself all the time. He's not even stopping to really defend himself. He puts something out there, and then he doubles down on it, and then he moves on. And everybody's still talking about it, and then stuff comes about that proves that he was at least partially true. Maybe he's going to be 100% true, but he doesn't care because he's left that behind. He's moved on. Everybody else is still talking about it. They're still playing catch-up with this guy.
You know, it's funny because when we were talking about Trump prior to the election, I never would say, you know, well, he says such outrageous things. And I said, think of it this way. Like when you're cooking spaghetti, you take a bunch of it, you throw it up against the wall and see what sticks, then you know it's done. That's what he's basically doing. He's taking it, he's throwing it against the wall, sees what's sticking, and then works with that. And it's the method he used to get elected is the method he's using as president.
Yeah, he's not governing any different than he ran his businesses from what people in the know are saying. He's using the same tactics, that's his skill set. He's a doer and a fantastic manager, and that's what he does. And basically, that's what a president is supposed to be. A president is supposed to show leadership by managing that huge bureaucracy that's under his thumb. You know, the executive branch is massive. And the president's job is to be a coach and to manage and to lead that mess and not try to dictate as a dictator or a potentate like we've had some in the past do, especially the last one. I don't know about people out in your audience, but I am very happy to be able to say former President Barack Hussein Obama instead of saying President Barack Obama.
Well, you know, for years, those of us on the conservative side have been saying if government will run by like a business, the way it is now, it would be in default bankruptcy and long gone. But if we could get someone in there to look at it like a business and pare down the waste, we would have a much better country. And guess what? Lo and behold, we got what we asked for. Now we got to see what he's doing. Oh, my goodness. He's doing exactly what a business should be doing, cutting out the waste. Bye-bye, NPR. Soon to be, bye-bye, EPA, and so forth and so on. And I think that's what has everyone nuts.
The other surprising thing is here's a guy who made a lot of promises on the campaign trail, and he's doing his best to fulfill each and every one of those. That's something else that we as the American people are not used to. We're used to these blowhards coming on and bloviating about a promise this and promise that, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And then we put them in office and find out, you know, maybe they'll give us a bone and fulfill one or two promises. And then the rest will go and do whatever they want. Then they'll come back 4 or 6 years later and ask us all over again. Well, we couldn't do it before, but I promise you we'll get it done this time. And we fall for it all over again and we reelect them. But this, and we don't expect them to fulfill not even half of what they promise. This guy is going down his promise list and checking everything off. He's really trying to fulfill each and every one of his promises. That's refreshing and something the American people, I don't think anybody's, unless you're over the age of 80, you've ever experienced a politician like this trying to fulfill every promise that he's made on the campaign trail.
No, that is true. You know, here we've got Gorsuch going up for the vote on Friday. And I think because of Trump's management style, if you want to call it that, it has emboldened more conservative elements in Congress to step forward and say, all right, fine, here's our plan. This is what we'd like to see happen. How can we work with you? People from the Freedom Caucus. I think he made a mistake when he went and tried to go after them, especially Justin Amash. That backlash from the people that elected him, I think, caused him to step back and say, all right, maybe we do have to look at it a little bit differently here, because he started off the Obamacare with a three-part plan. And you and I know if they got part one done, we will never see part two or three. And I think he realized it after the Freedom Caucus turned around and said, wait a minute, this is what.
Exactly. I was against this whole thing. I don't understand. Now, first of all, people have to understand that Trump promised repeal and replace. And I have always said that we don't need a replacement. All we need to do is repeal. And then we can fix each individual part if we go back to where it was before Obamacare took effect. Basically, just get the government out of it. That's going to fix it. That's good. And for people who say that can't work, I say, look at what happened when the government got out of the way of every other kind of insurance in this country, from car insurance to life insurance to disability insurance. You can buy your policy, and in many cases, you can buy a policy not from just within this country, but from another country. So you can go across state lines and buy your policy so you find exactly what you need at the price you can afford, a competitive price you can afford. The only kind of insurance that has these massive 1970s-style regulations and restrictions on them is health insurance, and that is why it costs so much.
You know, back in the 1970s, they went and deregulated the travel industry, especially the airline industry. And back then, when you went to get an airline ticket or something like that, you're talking about big bucks. Now, believe me, I know firsthand, because in 1978 to 82, I owned a travel agency with 13 employees. Once they started deregulating it, then you started to see the fares drop. You had the fares that were going for $2.99, then down to $1.99. And now you can fly from here to California for $99. That's what deregulation does. And this is what the public doesn't understand. We don't need government in the way. We need government out of the way.
If you open it up to competition and you allow entrepreneurs to enter the market easier. Now, I'm not saying that we don't need regulation. What I'm saying is we need logical and smart regulation. I mean, all around. I mean, yeah, there needs to be some consumer protections, but there also needs to be some protections for business. So smart regulation is the way to go, not over-regulation. Over-regulation just kills competition, it kills businesses, and it causes everything within that industry to skyrocket. And we see it everywhere that government has over-regulation. The prices are just astronomical.
Well, now, yeah. I'm going to move you on to go ahead, Curtis, because then I was going to ask him about Gorsuch. Go ahead.
Okay. We got the Gorsuch vote coming up probably Friday for Supreme Court justice. And everybody in the media is saying that the Democrats are blowing a chance to, have a say in the nomination process later on down the road. And I'm thinking, why should we really even give them that opportunity when we know they're going to want somebody less than a conservative put on the Supreme Court? I mean, when they're in power, they will stack the odds against us, and it would be in their favor that their choices will all be hardcore liberals. So I'm not understanding why even some on our side would say, hey, we need to work across the aisles on this with these guys. What are your thoughts on that?
It all has to do with this big tent type of thought that George Herbert Walker Bush tried to introduce to the Republican Party back when he was the chairman of the RNC back in the 60s and early 70s. This is all about trying to be fair and open the party to more and more people. When what the reality is if you just do what Ronald Reagan did, just be bold color difference to the Democrats and to liberalism, the American people will see it and understand it, and they will vote for it. So what you have now is you have some blue bloods in the Republican Party that have this thought from the period of time in the Republican Party, that if we're fair, if we're seen to be as fair and working with the Democrats, then more and more people will come to our side to see that we're trying to be fair and we're trying to be open and we're trying to cross the aisle. When the reality is, if you actually look at it and see how the Democrats, they'll point to the fact that the Democrats don't cross the aisle. And look what's happening to the Democrats. The Democrats are not losing because they won't cross the aisle to meet Republicans, and they're demanding Republicans cross the aisle to meet them. The Democrats are losing because they keep moving farther and farther to the left, and they're trying to pull the entire country that direction, and the vast majority of Americans don't want to go in that direction. That's why the Democrats lose. When you get a Republican who says, we're not going to go in that direction, we're going back to the right, we're going to pull this country back right and be more conservative, they win almost every single time, just about everywhere, with a few exceptions like the tri-state area of New York City and California and Illinois. Everywhere else in the country, If you stand on conservative constitutional principles, you almost always defeat any Democrat that they throw at you. And you don't have to walk across the aisle for that. You just stand on your principles and you move to the right. But you still have someone in the Republican Party that think that if they play fair, like John McCain, if you play fair, then you're going to be loved by everybody. And that's not the truth. I don't know how many times these people have to be stung, you know, by giant Democratic bees until they get it. But McCain, I don't know how many times he's already been stung by Democrats, and yet he still defends them. It's an amazing thing. I have no idea. It's some sort of other derangement syndrome when it comes to that. Maybe he is getting old. I don't know. I'm sorry?
Maybe like my lamesy gramnesty I have here in South Carolina. I don't know if you caught him whining on TV because the Democrats want to filibuster Gorsuch. Well, that's not fair. That's not the way it's supposed to be done. Grow a pair. Stand up there and say, fine, McConnell, go nuclear. Let's get this done and have him sworn in before midnight on Friday. But no, that's not fair. Oh, man, can someone B-slap him? You tell how much I love him. Especially when I was able to stand nose to nose with him, make him change his mind on a couple of issues. And I'm only 5'3", so I'm telling you, I was standing there nose to nose with him. But do you think that we will see Gorsuch sworn in by midnight?
I think there'll be hell to pay in the Republican Party if they have the ability to get him approved, and they don't do it. So if it means that McConnell needs to pull the nuclear option, then he needs to do it, because I don't think the American people are going to stand for anything less at this point. Here's a guy that they have nothing on. The only thing that the liberals don't like about him is that he's this is what they've said. Oh, he's an originalist. We can't have an originalist on the court. That's too right. So in other words, somebody who actually believes that the Constitution is not a living document and interprets it as the founders, the people who wrote it, intended it to be interpreted, that's somebody that the Democrats say is too far right. Now think about that. Here's a guy who wants to interpret the Constitution based on the way the people who wrote it intended it to mean, and the Democrats think that he's too far right. And now, if this is the person that that's the only thing that they have on them, this is the person you do not approve and put on and approve for the court, you're going to have some major problems. And I'm telling you, not in 2018, but in 2020, if they don't do this, if they don't start putting forth the president's agenda and start moving back towards the right like the American people seem to want them to do, you're going to see a rise of a third party. I'm predicting that right now. If they do not do it, because they're not going to put the Democrats back in power. I don't foresee that. What you're going to see is the rise of a third party. And if you see a rise of the third party, you're going to see the death of the Democrat Party, just like the old back in the days of the Whigs and the Republicans, when the Republicans started coming along and the Whigs died out. You could see the end of the Democrat Party. And maybe that wouldn't be such a bad thing, but you'll still have a Democrat Party in the old Republican guard. So you're not getting rid of Democrats. But you're going to see the rise of a new – we may not like that new party, by the way. Just putting that out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the big story that's been going around, especially on Fox News, is the surveillance. I call it – what the heck did I call it now? Oh, God, I had a name for it. I was putting it up on Twitter. Oh, Snoopgate. That's what I've been calling it, putting it up on – I'm going to call it Snoopgate. You know, that's the big story. You know, it started off with Eleanor Farkas back on May 2nd, made a unbelievable statement on Morning Joe on MSNBC, and no one caught on to it except for the Trump. He ended up 2 days later stating that he was wiretapped. He probably should have said I was electronically surveilled. But he used the word wiretap, and everyone knows it's synonymous with, you know, surveillance. He's the only one, and everyone got all up in arms with President Trump because he made such a statement on Twitter. How dare he? What proof has he? But meanwhile, 2 days before, Eleanor Farkas stated that she was walking the stuff up to the Hill so it could be leaked. She admitted it right on air. No one catches it. And then 20 some odd days later, finally Fox News picks it up. And why did it take them so long? And do you think it's as big a deal as I think it might be?
It took them so long because they were stuck on this mantra of getting rid of Trump. And of course, once Trump says something outlandish, what they want to do is stick to it so they can show that he's unfit to govern. See, this guy is crazy. I mean, you had some people out there saying that Trump has one neurological disease or another neurological disease. And so they were playing into that pattern. And you can't follow up on something that makes it look like he was telling the truth, that he knows what he's talking about, until it gets to the point where you just cannot ignore it anymore. And that is one of the things that Trump is very good at using social media, especially Twitter, on, and they cannot stand it. They cannot stand that he can put this stuff out there on Twitter and that it gets retweeted thousands and thousands of times. They can't hide this stuff if he jumps on it and tweets it. They can't. They can try to poo-poo it and say he's crazy, but in the end, all the people start looking at it. They start – and the regular people start looking online for this stuff that Trump is talking about. They find it, and they start posting it, and it gets to the point – where the lamestream media can no longer ignore it, and that's when they change direction. But we're the ones direct. It used to be that the media directed the stories. Today, because they have such a skewed and sourpuss agenda, it's Trump and us out here in the field that have to direct the mainstream media on the stories to cover. That's sad.
Well, you know, that is sad. That is very sad. And I was driving back from my pre-op visit at the hospital. And as I'm coming, you know, the drive I'm talking about from Hilton Head back to where I live. You're familiar, that long road. And I hadn't been listening to Mark Levin. And I was listening to Mark Levin, and he had on a reporter from Bloomberg. I forget what his name is. Ike something or other. Ike Luke or something like that. And he also had Adam Housley from Fox News. And these guys are really delving deep into this. And it seems that this surveillance, I'm calling Snoopgate, went back to as far as a year ago that they were doing this on Americans, not just Trump and his campaign. But if you remember, a little over a year ago, James Clapper sat before Congress and said there was absolutely no surveillance done on American people. He swore up and down there was absolutely no snooping. We were not spying on Americans, and right. But lo and behold, as it now reveals, that Susan Rice not only requested the unmasking of Americans, it wasn't just Trump's campaign. They said at first it may have been a couple of dozen. She did it a couple of dozen times, and then we heard several dozen times. Now they're saying it could be upwards of 1,000 people, possibly even more. Americans that were unmasked that may have had a conversation with a foreign person or a foreign entity, the conversation being surveilled, and instead of having their name redacted and it would be put in a lockbox, you can't touch it, you can't do anything, she asked to have those names unmasked so they could be leaked. Not only that, people that had access to those names, the knowledge of those Americans and what the conversations were, guess who's on the list? James Clapper. You had Brennan was involved, Ben Rhodes. So we don't know how many people had access to all this sensitive information and how many American security have been compromised.
It is a number. I think that we're going to find that you're going to probably see more. This is like the Clinton file gate all over again, when they had, was it 10,000 files, FBI files? That they had in their possession. This is a similar thing, but it's more digitized instead of actual files. And what you have is a number of people that are from the Obama administration that are still hanging around D.C. Anybody notice that Obama left town? I don't think he's been back since inauguration. Where is this going to go, and who is this going to possibly ensnare? Well, if they can thoroughly boil Susan Rice, double entendre intended there, and throw her under the bus, this is not going to stop at her. This is going to continue going up, and this is why I think you don't see Obama around, because now there's nobody can put a microphone in front of his face and say, you know, former President Obama, Mr. President, explain what all this is. He can't explain it without revealing everything that he knows. This is why this guy is incognito.
Well, I have a funny feeling it'll also go all the way up to Valerie Jarrett, who I call the Black Widow Spider. And that's not a comment on her skin tone. But, Rod, we do have a caller here from Tennessee. Let me bring the individual on. All right, area code 731, you're on the air live with Southern Sense. I'm your hostess, Annie. Our guest is Rod Eccles, the Rod Eccles Show. You have a question or comment?
Oh, I do. I admire you guys because you're speaking the truth. When y'all were speaking about Obama and those guys and all the unmasking, you know, this is a big deal. The government should not have that kind of power over, and that kind of without proper oversight. And it leads to bad things. I think it leads to blackmail and for political gain. And it's a slippery slope, I guess I would call that here. And are you there?
Yep, we're here. We're listening.
Oh, okay. And regardless of what people's political view is, this should scare the heck out of them. Because in what I do and what I'm trying to encourage people to do is contact their local and state and federal leaders and tell them, if this is not addressed, that you respond by voting against them in their upcoming elections. This is the only way we have to fight back. We can all fuss and carry on, and as Rod said today, you know, the extreme people. This is our chance, and Donald Trump, you know, I think was sent to us by God. And it's for us to take the initiative. He can't do it by himself. He can't do health care by himself. He needs our voice. And I guess that's what I wanted to say.
But, darling, I didn't get your name.
I'm Jonna. It's
Hi, Jonna
from Tennessee.
Well, thank you very much for the call, John. And you're right. We do have to lift up our voices, Rod, at the voting booth and by communicating with our elected officials. John, I'm going to put you on mute. If you want to come back on, press 1 twice, and I know that you're raising your hand again. Thank you for the call.
Okay.
But she is 100%. And this is what I've been saying on the show all the time. You've got to get your voice out there, whether or not you contact your local official by telephone, fax, email, write a letter. You know, get your voice out, put it out in the newspapers, write your editorials to the letters to the editor. I'm going to do a little bass awkward today. But you have to have your voice put out there in the public.
Yeah, people have to, Tip O'Neill, I always say this about Tip O'Neill, he was right about one particular thing, and I don't think the man realized how right he was on it about it, but all politics is local. And you got to start locally because even when it comes right down to it, when it comes even on the federal level, all of our representatives in Washington, the elected representatives, except for the president, are voted on locally. So all of this is local stuff. I mean, we like to think that these guys, you know, the House of Representatives, you know, the congressmen are national and the senators are national. They're not. They're local entities. And you've got to start focusing on your representative. Sure, we can, you know, me up here in New Hampshire, I can say, okay, Graham is, he's a problem. But really, there's nothing I can do about Lindsey Graham because I didn't elect him. I can't, you know, I have to worry about the two Democrats that my state stupidly sent, senators sent down to Washington, D.C. in the form of both of them former governors, Gene Shaheen and Maggie Hassan. So those are the people I have to be responsible for. And I can't say that it's everybody else, you know, your congressman is the problem. No, that's not how you do it. You got to look at your own representatives and say on a local level, you got to contact them. Me contacting Lindsey Graham is not going to do much to sway Lindsey Graham. Me contacting Mackie Hassan or Gene Shaheen is going to go a long way to persuading them. So that's what you guys have to do. You have to concentrate on your representatives. Forget this whole notion that you can put pressure on somebody else's senator, because you can't, because they'll look at you, you know, and they'll say, oh, I'm a Texas senator, and you're over there, you're in Louisiana. Get out of here. I'm not listening to you.
No, because they got to come from somewhere. They start off on the school board. They go from the school board to the council. They go from the council up to the state. And from the state, they end up going into the Fed, because they've already had the voter base, because now they're known locally. So you're absolutely right. You've got to get a hold of the local officials here, the ones that you voted for, and say, hey, listen, you know, if you even think if that is what your goal is, then you better start listening to us here and now. Go ahead, Curtis.
Rod, what do you think of the stand that the Freedom Caucus made? Do you think they did the right thing in seeing that the establishment kept the promise of the presidential candidate at the time, Donald Trump? Or should they have been excoriated the way they have been by the media and by some of those in establishment?
No, they stood their convictions, and that's exactly what they should have done, because their problem was is that this was supposed to be done in piecemeal, and those the Freedom Caucus has been in office long enough and experienced enough to know that typically when our government does something like this, they don't go all the way through. That the first bill is what they want. They're not going to come back and fix it. You always hear this, well, let's just pass this bill now, we'll come back later and fix it. No, the first bill that they pass is what they want, and they don't think it needs to be fixed. We weren't going to get a fix. We were going to end up with Obamacare Lite. And that was their problem, and I'm glad that they stood up and pointed that out, because nobody else was. Nobody else was pointing that out. So the being excoriated by the president and by the insiders of the Republican Party is probably a badge of honor for those guys, and they're not going to be. Look, they got elected. They got elected by promising to do exactly what they did. So most of them have no fear of being turned out of office based on this. If anything, what they did here based on this is going to get most of them reelected a lot easier. So they stood by their convictions, and that's a good thing.
Well, as soon as Poe stepped down from the Freedom Caucus, and I said, that Texas seat is up for grabs. As soon as he did that, I said, that was the wrong move, especially if you're from Texas. And if you want to keep that a red state, there's going to be someone from the conservative side, maybe Tea Party candidate, will be going up against Poe, and Poe is out of here. And they're going to see one by one in the midterm elections, these wishy-washy guys are going to start to disappear. Because now we, as a conservative movement, are emboldened and said, yes, we were able to succeed. We were able to take the House. We were able to take the Senate. And now the presidency. We can put together quality, good candidates to go out there.
This is something that hasn't happened overnight. I know a lot of people are trying to portray this as being, you know, just this a hissy fit against Obama. It's this is a white lash. No, this is not a white lash. This has been building since 2010, when the Tea Party helped take back the House of Representatives. This is nothing more than an extension of the Tea Party. This is something else that they don't fully understand. The Tea Party was not a party, even though it was called the Tea Party. It was a movement. Now, even though the Tea Party itself, the movement itself, seems to have faded, the actual movement that they adhere to, which was conservatism and constitutionalism, didn't die. It got stronger and more emboldened, and that's how we got Donald Trump. This is something that the left cannot figure out, which is why they keep losing. The Tea Party movement is not dead. It's just moved on, because it is a movement. It isn't an actual party.
Exactly. And it's funny because, you know, I was seeing my meetings where people were fading out and they weren't showing up. But now I see a rise of people coming back to our meetings. So we are not a political party. We are not a 501c3 or c4. Some of the groups are. Some of us are not. We are not, we don't have a charter or anything like that. We're just a loose group of people that meet once a month. We bring forward guest speakers so we can educate ourselves. These are knowledgeable people, and these are people that are a center of our local community. So I'm telling you, that they may call themselves something else. I still say Tea Party, and a lot of other people still say Tea Party. We're not gone, and we have not forgotten. That's for dang sure. So, you know, you think the Tea Party, after McCain called us hobbits, you think we disappeared? No. And by the way, John McCain, the hobbits were the heroes of the trilogy. They saved the day. So where are the hobbits? You know, I love to say that, especially when somebody turns around and says something to like you or to Curtis and call you an Uncle Tom. Hey, wait a minute. You didn't read the book because Uncle Tom was the guy that saved. He was the savior in the story. He gave up his life so others can have freedom. He was a freedom fighter. So go ahead and call me that as much as you want, because it should be a badge of courage. Am I wrong or right?
No, you're absolutely correct. It's something that they try to turn into a derogatory term that really doesn't faze most of us. That's the other thing that the left just doesn't understand. See, they're sensitive, and they don't like being called names. We on the right, you know, I don't give a rip. It doesn't face me. In fact, it means I'm actually doing my job and I'm getting under your skin. So,
you know, and I love now because Fox now has Tucker Carlson, and he always brings on someone with an opposing opinion, and sometimes someone on an outrageous level. And he has fun getting underneath their skin because he seems to know exactly what to hit. And one of the news stories he was doing was about these fake news. And it was absolutely hilarious because if you think about it, news has been around since the dawn of man. As soon as man learned how to talk, he learned how to gossip, and there was fake news. You can never stop it. What you can do is educate people to recognize it. So what is the big deal?
Well, because the fake news, they changed the definition of fake news. This isn't about, you know, what we used to call fake news was something like The Onion. You know, it was satire. That was fake news. So they changed the definition of it to mean anything that they don't like or agree with. Now that's, you know, Fox's fake news. Why is Fox make fake news? They report on a lot of the same things that the mainstream media does, but they just give us more facts, not less opinion. So that's fake? No, it's just something that they don't agree with or like. So they give it a name. They're calling it a name. You know, people want to call me an Uncle Tom. Great. Why? Because I'm telling you the truth, or because I stand by the Constitution, or because I know my history. I know the truth about my history. So I don't even listen to these people except when they start wanting to put their feelings in written down in legislation. Then I have to stand up and say, no. When you want to start saying, well, we need to have laws against fake news. No, we don't. What you're saying is that you want to put in place a mechanism where you get to decide what's news and what's not. That I'm not going to stand for.
No, absolutely not. Rod, we've got Mike Cutler coming on in the second half. Do you want to hang around with him? Because he's a great guest, and you would probably be excellent to have on your show. He happens to be a really
sure.
dear friend of mine, too. I've known him for 3 decades. But Jonna has another question or comment. Let me bring her on quickly as we wait for Mike Cutler to call in. Let me unbleep her. There you go, Jonna. You have a question or comment.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I have a comment. I just wish the Republican Party would stick together as the Democrats do. And the Freedom Caucus, to be honest, I don't know that much about them. But I just have a question. I'd like to know what they've accomplished. And all this time, you know, we got out and paved the streets. And during the Tea Party, I did kind of, you know, out of the scene things. But there, they let Obama, everything was passed. I mean, I don't remember him fighting that hard to take over and trample the Constitution. And that's all I want to say. I'm for us sticking together. And I think that, you know, Trump, you know, showed some inexperience, and, you know, it may be where the Freedom Caucus goes. But you know what, he's working his tail off, and I'm satisfied with that. But I think that the guys that have been there longer need to, you know, man up as well. That's my comment.
All right. Well, Johnny, here is something that just recently happened, and thanks to the Freedom Caucus pushing it forward. One of them is Paul Ryan pulled an anti-gun health care proposal because of the Freedom Caucus. No one was aware that there was gun control in Ryan Care, so they forced him back on that one. The Freedom Caucus, when they pulled the health care, that is one thing. There's something else that is occurring because people are now emboldened by the conservative movement. In North Dakota, they signed a bill letting residents carry a firearm without a permit. It's now the 14th state to do it. As a matter of fact, there's a proposal here in my state of South Carolina, which is going onto the floor, I believe, this week. Mexico lawmakers were able to defeat a gun registry bill. And the Supreme Court, believe it or not, even though it's 50-50, ruled in favor of defendant whom a gun rights group had supported. So, you know, there are things that are moving forward. I had a whole list of things that occurred with Trump that he was able to pass through Congress because he had the support of some group like the Freedom Caucus. But, John, I got to bring on my next guest, and I want to thank you for the call. Again, if you want to come on and ask questions of my next guest, remember to press 1 twice, okay?
Okay. Thank you for
the call.
Thank
you
for telling me that. Thanks.
Okay, great. And I think Mike Cutler just dropped off. Mike, where'd you go? Well, we've got Cool Mike raising his hand. Go ahead, Cool Mike.
Hey, I was enjoying the discussion, Annie, as always. I'm kind of in a cross mix here. I'm glad Ryan Care or Obamacare Lite failed. Number one is they just need to repeal it. Just repeal it. Let the free market open it up to the free markets. But on the same token, as President Trump needs to, I agree with the last comment. He's kind of new at this. I think President Trump really needs to kind of go through that reshuffle of his staff. He's picked some pretty decent people, but on the other hand, some are not. And I think it's just a matter of time before he really cleans house. And gets the rock stars in place.
Well, Mike, he's already doing that. He's already announced there's going to be a shuffling up of his staff. He's already announced
that's important. You can start with Betsy DeVos. But the point being is that, we just need to repeal this, period. Just repeal it. I mean, I don't see what the problem is. But also, I think some of the people from the Freedom Caucus, we support a lot of them, but I think they need to just tone down their anti-Trump rhetoric, because realistically, Trump is the best thing that's ever happened to the Freedom Caucus. And I think you saw Rand Paul and Ted Cruz. I mean, they're making headway in doing some cooperation with the president. Of course, my congressman got right in front of the camera, lipping off his big mouth. But anyway, that's my personal view. Is I think that we just need to repeal it. Period. It's simple. They tried it like 5 times before. Where's the problem?
My congressman had worked with Rand Paul on a proposal, which never got out of conference, unfortunately, which would have repealed completely Obamacare and then rebuild by allowing being able to buy it across state lines and opening up the markets, basically cutting out all of the deregulation. But it hasn't gone so far. But maybe that's possibly the building block that Rand Paul is going to walk up to Trump with and say, all right, fine, take a look at this. This is what we put together, and let's see what we can work with on that. What do you think, Rod?
Agreed. One of the things we have to remember here is that, again, Trump is not a professional politician. And many in the Freedom Caucus, they are professional politicians. So you have to really think of it from that point of view. You're looking at a professional politician versus a guy who's actually trying to be a statesman, not a politician. And yes, folks, there is a difference. Many of our founders were statesmen. They were not politicians. None of them were professional politicians. I mean, they got experience in office pretty darn quick, but they did not get into office by being professional politicians. What they did was just stand up for what they believed in their gut and in the core to be right, and I think that's what Donald Trump is doing. And you're right, this is something that the Freedom Caucus needs to understand and needs to grab a hold of all of that stuff that they agree with Trump on and promote that. And they need to stop being derogatory about the few things that they disagree on. So they disagree with the repeal replacement thing. Got it. Don't make that little molehill a mountain, because there's so much more in there that you probably will agree with Trump on that you need to work with him on. Let's face it, Trump is, you know, he's a new kid on the block, and he's a big new kid, and he's not going away. He's got the ear of a lot of people, a lot of Americans. So it's not something, it's not advantageous for you to try to take on the president, you know, mano a mano, because it didn't work for the Democrats at all, and they tried and tried, and it backfired on them. So I'm telling you, know, the Freedom Caucus needs to do the same thing. They need to heed that warning. And back off, find the things that they can find common ground with the president on, and move forward with it. Because if they do that, vote for Trump. The other stuff that they don't agree with him on, the president will end up learning how to compromise with them, and they'll get more of what they want.
Well, Rod,